Now, reality TV, it is nothing new. In fact, the rise of reality TV can be traced back to not one, but two writer strikes in the US, one in the noughties and one an earlier one in the 1970s. Now, there is a show on the telly right now that's captured the imagination of hundreds of thousands of people here and in the UK. That is Love Island. And to speak more about this, I am joined right now by Angela Smith, who's a professor of language and culture. Angela, thank you for joining me this morning.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on your show.
Angela, why are we all obsessed with reality TV?
Well, it's an insight into other people's lives, which are just like ours, but a hyper version of it. We think we're seeing people's lives as they don't want them to be seen, because they appear to be ignorant of the fact we're watching them. And it's a way of spying on people in a way, so we can get ideas about our own lives, and we can judge people without being judged ourselves.
So that voyeuristic quality that we have with all of this,
absolutely.
Is that always going to be something that we're just being nosy?
Well, I think that we're interested in people's lives and people's relationships, which is what makes something like Love Island so popular. We want people to be happy in their lives, which is why we get so upset when there are arguments and there are disagreements, and there are people in Love Island, for example, who don't be faithful to the person who we think they should be with.
Is there an element, because reality TV over the past two decades, we've come from something that was very innocent, we'll say, in the first series of Big Brother, when it felt like a social experiment, to people who seem like, you know, they just want fame and celebrity status and to get free stuff. With Love Island, because we all know they want to be famous, does that give us, does that let us kind of give them a little more leeway?
I think with something like Love Island, and certainly since programs like Big Brother became very well known, very famous, the people who were participants on them started to become famous because they were appearing on those shows. But I think we do give them more leeway now, because we take it for granted. We're so used to the idea that they're going to come out of that reality TV bubble back into real life, and their faces and their stories have been all over social media, all over conventional media. So we feel that we know them, and they are licensed to be famous because we have seen them, even though they have just been performing as real people rather than acting.
Mm. They're obviously all aware that they're on camera 24/7.
Yes.
It's something that maybe before people did forget, but now they're aware of it. Do you think we see the real people because of that awareness?
I think it's very difficult to perform in an authentic self for 24 hours a day. I think that there are moments when we might remember that, and certainly in programs like Love Island, there are what used to be called box pops, where you are talking directly to the camera, where you're taken to one side. But by and large, I think they forget that that they are performing on television all the time. There has to be an element of that which is conscious, but it's not really possible for us to pretend to be someone who we aren't for that element of that duration of 24 hours for several weeks at a time.
Now, we're looking at a bunch of extremely beautiful, some very much enhanced beauty. Is that the reason that we want to watch it, or does it go deeper?
I think it's much deeper than that. The person who seems to be the favourite to win at the moment, Danny Dyer, is not as conventionally slender and attractive as the other participants. She freely admits to that. But she is nevertheless the one that we find the most authentic and the most likable on the program at the moment. There are other examples of people appearing on reality television where they have felt under pressure to be part of this body beautiful image. Quite famously, a couple of years ago, the swimmer Rebecca Adlington was on I'm a Celebrity, and she was comparing her body to the body of the surgically enhanced, very slender other participants who were women on the program at the same time. And she became very upset that she didn't look like that. And it became a real news story at the time. Why should she feel that she had she wasn't as worthy of attention as they were when she's actually a gold medal Olympian. So I think that we do look at people in the way that they are very, very attractive to look at, but I think it goes much deeper than that. We judge people by their personalities ultimately.
Is it then important in the broader context that it's making us start to have these conversations about, you know, why we see a certain thing as being beautiful when it can be something else, and that we are all much deeper than the superficial?
I think so. I think that we have come out of the initial, oh, isn't that person attractive? I would love to look like that person, or I would love to be with that person, into seeing that the actual ideas behind that are entirely superficial. And in a wider context, we are having these debates now where fashion magazines are being pressured and are being encouraged to have more realistic looking models on it, so not size 2, size 4 models anymore. And I think this is part of a much wider debate that body image is part of, or discussions about body image are certainly things that are being had with young women in particular.
I know that, you know, conversations that are happening online in relation to Love Island, that is huge. You know, at the moment, it's the World Cup and Love Island that seems to be taking over social media platforms. And for some people who haven't watched it before, it's like, oh God, these are just stupid, beautiful people. You know, they're not doing anything. They're not adding anything to the world. There is a lot going on between the relationships between the men and the women in there, between the men and the men, the women and the women. Are we seeing something that is helping us understand our wider world when it comes to gender politics and how women and men interact?
I think that it is not only to do with gender politics, but it's to do with the demographic target audience of this program. So the people who are complaining that there is nothing happening of any note in Love Island, there's far more important things happening in the world, they are not the target audience. To the demography, the 18 to 28 year old age group, which is primarily what Love Island is aiming at, this is very important. This is the sort of things that they are interested in, their relationships and their interaction between men and women. And they are looking at Love Island and engaging with it on that level, whereas older people are less likely to look at it that way. So I think that it is to do with age and the demographic target audience rather than more widely gender politics.
We know that there was a very sad news recently that a former contestant, Sophie Graydon, on Love Island, she had been speaking about mental health battles and what it had been like being in the house on the island, and she's passed away. Are people putting their mental health at risk, opening themselves up like this to millions of people because of what's happening with online and social media activity?
I think that it is. I think that there is a huge problem with that, which has long been recognised by the producers of these programmes. I think that there was a statistic about Love Island that more people applied to go on Love Island than applied to go to Oxford universities this year.
Yeah, Oxford and Cambridge together, I think it was.
Yes,
yeah.
It was. Yeah. I think that part of the auditioning process is looking for characters, so people who are going to be good entertainment, but also it's judging how resilient they are to this sort of pressure that is being put on them. And sometimes they obviously get it wrong. There was one of the early contestants in Love Island this year left after the first few days because he couldn't cope with the pressure on him at that point. Yes, I think they are very aware of it, but they are not as effective at weeding out the people who are not resilient enough at the moment.
Okay, yeah, so there's a danger there. And then for us, the voyeurs who are watching this, is it because it's a game of chance? You know, we never know what's going to happen. It's unexpected.
It is a game of chance, but also I think we're all romantics at heart. Mm. It's sort of a fairy story in beachwear. You have people who we want to see coupled up. We want to see them being happy. And I think one of the most... one of the things that has attracted the most complaints on Love Island in the past few days has been the way that Danny Dyer was made to be very upset by a manipulation of images. And Ofcom in the UK received a huge number of complaints that this was manipulation and exploitation. So we want her to be happy. We don't want her to be sad and upset. And that is very much what we want for these sorts of programs. We want to see a happy outcome, which is why we have a lot of programs at the moment which are dating programs or relationship programs. Yeah. And this is just another manifestation of that same sort of... genre of program.
My heart was broken for her. Is reality TV going anywhere, Angela?
Oh, I think that reality TV is going to be with us for quite some time, but as we've seen with Love Island, it is going further and further into social media and less on mainstream television. So I think that we're going to see it drifting off in that direction. But there will be something that comes up next that we haven't expected or anticipated, and that will show us television in a new way.
Angela Smith, Professor of Language and Culture. Thank you so much for joining us, Angela.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers. A new reality TV show. Dogs Finding Love. I'd watch that. Here's Ariana Grande, No Tears Left to Cry on Today FM.